Oh, yours was loud.
I did look down, and even though you didn't attempt to thoroughly warn me, I was thinking 3, 2, 1, and then you were going to push the button. Not you had pushed it, and then the countdown was happening. So I was still off.
Well, that's why they made an Office episode about that.
Am I supposed to make a noise? Because that's not my personality.
No, you
noise is not your personality.
Not in that way.
Oh.
Words.
You could just pick a word to say. I don't know. What do you want to do?
Spaghetti. My name's Malia.
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti.
Just feel like I don't know. I want to be just known for what I say and who I am. My actions.
Not noises you make.
Not weird noises I make.
Okay, then do an action every time it counts.
I know.
Down.
Just doesn't really work in the podcast, I guess.
Yeah, you say the word action, James. I'm hoping for an accent since somebody just went abroad and came back to the US. So do you have any accents for us, Malia? That
no,
won't be
I'm
offensive.
I'm also not good at that.
Now that you've said you want an act, you prefer to be known by your actions. I do feel like we will make up a thing that you did each time. Just narrate it for the people.
Got it.
Yeah, the Europeans currently like me, so I would like them to continue to like me.
All of them,
and not everyone I meet always likes me. I haven't met a mean one yet. I really haven't.
Oh, I thought that was just in general. And I was like, I have the same problem. And then they get to know me. But for the first like 5 minutes, people are like, yes, yes, this is an interesting red fella.
I just have this thing where I like want to make sure that I'm never the ugly American out in America and outside. So it's like overcompensating at all times. So
it's like an opposite Will Rogers thing that you've never met somebody who didn't like you.
Well, just in Europe. Americans, I think I've met plenty that don't like me. So
got
that,
enough,
that
got
I have no trouble there. That's fine.
Way to alienate the audience right away.
I know. I'm sorry.
So I guess this is the point where I look at Brad and Brad.
No, we gotta keep going. Brad's still doing research.
Oh, my bad. Hey everybody. just kidding. Brad. Introduce our show.
Hey, everybody. Oh, yeah. This is the Everything is Okay podcast. We are five people from the great town of Claremore, Oklahoma. We all grew up in some form of conservative Christianity, and since that time have done our own deconstruction at various points and are now at different points in that process and are trying to figure out how to do life while having faith and asking questions. So
that's it everybody, that's the show.
Since we're supposed to ask questions, I just started wondering about the validity of our opening statement, our almost opening statement, or just after opening statements opening statement. Malia, have you gone through much of a deconstruction?
I would say that like my faith in general has always started deconstructed because I didn't go to church growing up like most people in, I feel like, Oklahoma, because we moved around a lot and I wasn't allowed to go to church until like middle and high school. So
you weren't allowed?
I never had. So kind of an interesting thing that can happen within the churches of Christ. If you are somewhere that there is not a church of Christ that is deemed like biblically enough, we didn't go. So if we lived in like Nebraska and it was a very Catholic town, and we lived in Missouri and there wasn't one or whatever. So I didn't go to church until we moved to Claremore, and then it was like middle and high school when we really started going. And so I didn't have like VBS in my life. I remember literally the first time I went to a VBS, it was like middle school, and I asked the teacher how to spell Jesus, and she thought I was being a smartass, and I wasn't. I didn't know how to spell it. I thought it was J-E-A-S-U-S, and I looked around, and people weren't spelling it that way, and you guys knew me in school. Like, I wanted to be correct, and so she was like, you know how to spell Jesus, and I was like, no, I really don't. So I feel like...
Oh, great story. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I love it.
I could name the name, but I'm not going to name the name. But so reading the gospel and doing those things, like I feel like I had to come to it at a somewhat like older level than a lot of us. So a lot of my, I remember reading the gospels like in middle and high school and noticing that they're all different. And that being my formulation of faith is very different because it, the Bible never became like an idol to me because I saw that stuff from the beginning, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I think I've definitely like had times where I've had to like deconstruct definitely some things that have been formulaic and who I became like in general. But I was always the more liberal minded person in my youth group. And it helped like my friends, I had friends that were Baptist. I had friends, like one of our other good friends was Jehovah's Witness. I had, you know, like I had a lot of those things and I wasn't just within my evangelical circle. So I think that helped. But again, I had, I think there was like a deconstruction that happened again in college with like Obama because I was a hardcore Obama supporter in a Church of Christ university. And there was only a couple of us there that like had the Obama like sticker like on our apartment. And so, but again, like in my Bible classes in university, like I would talk to my professors about stuff like that. And they'd be like, I agree with you, but just don't tell anyone, you know? So I just, I had a different, it was just different in certain ways. So there wasn't as many things that needed to be torn down because they weren't necessarily built from the beginning. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. So is that way of viewing the Church of Christ where if they aren't like certain ways doctrinally or whatever the criteria was, is that like something that your family did or is that Church of Christ in general?
No. So my parents are pretty liberal minded. I would think they'd be more black sheepy. And I feel like they would listen to this and tell me that that's true. My mom loves to get into a Facebook argument. No offense, mom. She knows she does, though. So it's fine. So no, I don't think that's the standard in the Church of Christ at all.
Okay.
At all, at all. There, I would say, like, in the evangelical perspective, you have, like, Church of Christ are probably even further to the right than, like, your Southern Baptists.
Interesting.
I mean, you guys remember, we didn't do musical instruments.
I know. I just thought that was like a weird
thing. That was a question I about had for y'all. You.
Yeah.
It was really important. So every transition that ever happens in a church in all the denominations I've been to, there are like three chords that you use to transition between songs. How did y'all transition anything?
Nothing. Silently. It was awkward.
Oh, that's weird.
And in the a cappella, was there a key change?
Because that was pretty vital. I think so. You know, I'm not so good. I like don't know that musical stuff as much as you guys. Because again, just don't know any of that stuff. But no, like the church I go to now, which is a Church of Christ, we have musical instruments and like women speak and like women preach. But it's,
I mean, once you lend the instruments in, you might as well do whatever you want.
Exactly. And that honestly is an argument that a lot of Churches of Christ have. So, but we're definitely.
Why do they not do instruments?
Because there is a verse in the Old Testament that says, make music to God in your heart.
Perfect.
But what about all the Psalms that literally tell you what instrument to use?
Yeah. And that's the argument. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I love how we immediately started getting into serious questions with Malia. I'm surprised. So you're still Church of Christ. We're learning new stuff. Every day.
I mean,
like I had no idea. That's amazing.
It's just how it kind of worked out. And like the community of people I have fallen into are like people of my heart. I didn't necessarily go out searching for a Church of Christ. I didn't go out searching for any denomination necessarily at all. When we were looking for a new church, like in adulthood, I have always, I mean, you guys know this, I'm on a freaking podcast. I'm a talker. Like I would like to say I'm more of a leadership type of person. And growing up in youth group, the guys in my youth group, when they would need to preach because they were the guy, like they would come ask me what to say. Like, and I would, and like my husband who I married, like if he got asked to teach a class, like he asks me what to say. And so when we were looking for a church, I was like, I have two little girls and I'm not going to let them go through what I went through when people at my church would come to me and be like, if only you were a guy, you'd make a really great preacher. I'd be like, okay. Like, no, I don't want the gifts that my children have been given and that they cultivate to not get to apply to them based on their genitalia. So like, that's not okay with me. So we went looking for a place where like they could be leaders if they so choose to be leaders. And my husband was doing like the homily for communion. And my daughter, when she was two, was freaking out because she wanted to go up there with him. And that was like the last straw for me, that I was like, no, like, it's not okay for me to like hold down my two-year-old because she doesn't happen to be a boy, because she saw little boys go up with their dads to help do communion. Uh-huh. Not okay with me. So, and it's not okay that I've like been okay to like allow myself to be in the background just because, for as long as
so I am. You said homily. Is that Church of Christ or Catholic?
Or kind neither? Of like, I don't think it's either. It's just basically like the lesson the you message? Give based on, yeah, the message you give based on.
So that whatever. Hearing that word, that reminds me of my experiences in Mass, which are limited, but yeah, interesting. Cool. Well, this is fun. All right. So Malia, we're going to TV timeout you because I have a lot more questions, but we've got to jump into some crazy stuff at the beginning real quick. First being how beautiful James' hair looks right now. Number one. Mm-hmm. Number two being where the heck is Brad's mustache? All right. Our listeners voted. They want the mustache back. Where is it, Brad?
I never heard results of the...
Oh, overwhelmingly in favor.
I think I voted in favor of it as well. So
the Top Gun stash. Yeah. So, yeah. And your wife freaking texted me. Okay. She said, David, I miss you. And also, Brad looks great in a mustache. So, yeah, I don't think she actually texted me, Brad. Don't get nervous.
She told me she responded to it.
Yeah, she totally did. Yeah, it was wonderful. It was great.
Not a lot of people can pull off a mustache. I'm just saying.
See, I don't think I can. I thought it was kind of ridiculous, but I mean, I'm not going to say that it's.
You look good without a mustache, whatever. But it was strong, man. And Malia's right. Yeah, Malia's right. Like, no, not everybody can do it at all. No.
Yeah, and if you can, then I feel like you probably should, on behalf of all the people who wish they could.
Exactly. Touché. I mean, that's why James has such a big beard, because most humans can't do that. Especially, like, yeah.
It was definitely a conversation starter, and people were happier to see me when I walked in with it. So there is that. I mean, I walked into the gym and I would get asked about it every day by the front desk.
Are there not other boys with mustaches in Oklahoma City?
My husband's sure not allowed to have one, so.
Okay. Doesn't look good. I don't like is it. What you're saying. No. Okay.
I love him, but it's not. I'm not a fan.
Yeah. Okay. So I think it has a little bit to do with the jawline too. Brad, you have a pretty strong jawline and some chin action that's not, you know, terrible. So that helps as well.
Well, I mean, I guess if there's one thing that I have that's positive is that somehow the shape of my head works well for shaving it, which thank goodness, because I don't have any hair. And apparently facial hair. So I've got at least something going for it at some point. But yes, they would ask me about it. The day that I cut it off, I got a bunch of hands in the air and they were like, I can't believe you actually did it. I didn't think you were going to do it, type of thing. So
how you know you need to have it. For the people.
For the people.
For the people. By your face.
Yeah. I don't think my mom was amused by it, but everybody else seemed to like it. So there's
that. I think the truth just came out. I don't know why we're still talking about your mustache, but I'm really interested now. So your mom weighed in. She said, Bradley Dale, get rid of that mustache. Your wife, Megan, is like, Bradley Dale, come over here. I've never been more attracted to you. So we're really at an intersection here.
And let's be clear, based on your scenario, my mom did not win out on the argument here. It was okay, just...
Good. All right, good. Thank you. All right. I know people are worried right now, so that's good. Yeah.
Based on your two scenarios, it wasn't a mom versus wife situation.
In your scenario, it was like they were standing on either side of a room, just calling him over like he was a dog.
No, but I will tell you. So I went to visit my parents this last weekend, and we went on Friday night, and it was the first time I had went by, like, taken Crosby by myself for like a long car ride. So this is 2 hours, I guess. And that went well. But the moment we walked into the house, my mom didn't say, "Hey, there they are." It was, "Hey, there she is."
Oh yeah.
And I didn't exist. Yeah. Yep. Right.
It's because, like, you shaved the mustache.
Sure. We'll say that's the reason. It had nothing to do with the grandchild that walked in with me. But yeah. So I don't exist in my own house that I grew up in at this point. And I'm okay with it.
They're just, kids are just really cute, man. Like, in general.
It's true.
Not all of them. Right.
That's true as well.
Just ours. Yeah. The ones that are.
We have cute kids, so
yeah,
thank God for that.
Well, my kids look nothing like me, but they are very cute. So
I would disagree a little bit.
They are so blonde. No,
I know, it's a hair color though.
I know. There's, they look like my husband. But...
All right, we'll get them on later about that. Yeah. So I'm gonna.
And if it makes you feel any better, when I was a kid, I was very, very, very blonde as well.
I never was.
So your girls could grow up to be bald.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Oh, there's some encouragement.
Wow. Man,
you got yourself at that one.
That was a jump. That was a jump. There we go.
This is a weird way to try. Weird way to try to encourage her, man.
This is my transition to a new section that I'm calling Weird Christian Twitter segment. Fix that in post, Brad. Thank you. So guys, I don't know about y'all, but I have fun on Twitter, and then sometimes Twitter makes me like really angry. And I think that's probably pretty commonplace for anybody that's on Twitter at any point in their lives. Like, you get like the most up-to-date news, you get like really offensive just takes in general. And then a lot of other stuff that happens, right? So I saw this post, and I'm sure that y'all saw it. It definitely crossed multiple social media worlds. But basically, it was a picture of the United States, and there was this giant, what looked like a giant lake or sea that was superimposed in the middle of the United States. And it was connected to some statement about global warming, that like, if global warming continues as it's going in X amount of years, this is what's going to happen to the United States. Did any of y'all see this picture?
I did not.
Okay, perfect. No, this I is didn't. Good. We're going to keep going. So anyway, the water, the body of water that was on the United States was clearly, and I am not super smart, especially when it comes to geography, but it was obviously the Mediterranean Sea. Like, the outline of Italy is so obvious. All right, so you know how they had all those fact checkers, like one of them had to go and explicitly say, "Hey, we fact check this, and no, in X amount of years, the United States isn't going to magically have the Mediterranean Sea in the middle of it." So I made some silly tweet about it, and a lot of people liked it. And I was like, this is why people are on Twitter. This never happens to me. Like, I'm lucky if I get like one like, and I got like over 100 likes, and I'm like, oh, it's addictive. Yeah. There's this other segment of Twitter that is freaking hilarious. And it's basically, it's not like an open mockery of super conservative Christians, but kind of is. And there's a lot of different people that really show up in that world. But we're going to play a game called Let's Talk About This Tweet. I'm going to do 3 tweets, and I just want to get y'all's feedback on it. And
how's the point system work?
Yeah. So basically, if you have the funniest response to this, then you get 1 point. And if your response is thoughtful, you get 1 point. And if your response is terrible, you get a -1 point. So
can I have sassy points?
Oh gosh, yes. I want sassy points. This is why you're on the podcast. Yeah. Yes, please. And sassy points. Okay, so we're going to start
count as double.
Okay, thank you.
Exactly. All right, so tweet 1. All right. So this is from somebody called at Tori Glass. What up, Tori? This is what she said. Saving your sexuality for marriage means sex on your wedding night is merely not flipping a switch and flipping the narrative. You're being expected to defuse a bomb with no skills, naked, while someone watches.
Am I the bomb? I just want to know, am I the bomb? Like, are the girls supposed to be the bomb is the question.
I was wondering some of that as well. Like, what part is the bomb? And I'm guessing because it explodes, it's probably the male genitalia.
Well, that's not
Dude, that's the easiest bomb known to men. Are you kidding? What?
But why is he just watching?
Defuse it. Well, and why are we defusing it? Don't we want it to explode?
If you do it right, I guess.
Bonus points for Malia.
But why is he just watching? I think her wedding night was super weird is basically what I'm hearing from that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do a pulse, though, from your friends, whatever. Like, is there any truth to this? To this tweet for folks that are saving themselves to marriage and then wedding night being way different than their expectation. Because I assume that that is true. And I've heard a lot of that feedback from some of my friends that waited till marriage. What do y'all think?
Well, for sure, people our age who grew up with purity culture, like, I don't even think necessarily just for the female mindset, but I think for those that grew up in that culture, that is a hard switch on and off for sure.
Yeah.
It for me, not this dramatic, more just like it took me a hot second. But also, I don't know how much of it was that and how much of it was my like wedding day was very stressful for me just because I am a human person and it was a big stressful day. And so that took me a little bit to come down off that. And I also wanted to open all of my presents. So like that's really what I wanted to do.
And your spouse was like, open this present.
Exactly.
Can you open this present, please?
100%. And I was like, but no, I want to open all the cards. I want to count all the money, which is terrible, but that's what I wanted to do. So, but it wasn't this dramatic for me.
Right.
So. Oh man. I think after three episodes with Sheila Gregoire, we and our listeners are well aware that the bomb that needs to be diffused is absolutely not the man's penis. It's the female orgasm, which clearly is not being diffused generally. So yeah, that's a fun one. So let's
but I
move
also
on.
Think I think I just want to say without purity culture, I think that is also going to just be difficult for men to figure out in general. I don't think we have enough education aside from purity culture. I just think it's larger than that. That's
sure.
All.
There's issues with having to figure all of that out and knowledge and whatever, but adding in shame makes it a whole lot harder.
For sure. Like women aren't taught to figure that out. Like we don't know. So how are you guys supposed to know?
Yeah. I mean, you're never supposed to touch your own bodies, but somebody else is supposed to have figured it out before. Yeah, it's weird.
All right. I really hope women are touching their own bodies for the record. Like
that is
all the time.
That is the stance of the podcast and Malia specifically. Women touch your bodies.
Oh my God.
Yes. Masturbate. Masturbate. So, okay, cool.
All right. This will be my last
second. Malia, thank you for coming on. And I really hope that Kayla listens to this and she just loses her mind I just chanted masturbation. Okay. So, second one.
I have a story about this that I want to tell you.
Wait,
not about this.
About chanting masturbation?
There was a person, I can't. Can you cut this part out?
No, keep going. This is what the people asked for.
Okay, you guys remember
No names.
No, do you guys just remember how like unbelievably stupid I was about stuff like this and all the t-shirts I used to wear in high school that were like, had like innuendos on them that I had no idea? Because I shopped at Hollister and Abercrombie and Fitch. There was a person I knew.
Flex. Somebody had some money.
No. There was just times that people were talking about this and people were named this word. And I didn't know it was a joke. That's what they did a lot. I just thought it was their name. And so I used to call them that too. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I thought it was like a version of Mister. And so I was like, oh, that's nice. Like everyone's being nice about that person. So
that's so
it's great. Weird how respectful we are to this one person.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Twitter number two. This is from @NateGrace79. Nate Grace. Love it. Or Nat Grace.
Soon don't to be know. Sponsor.
Probably Nat. Natalie Grace. Yep. I'm good at reading. Just a reminder. This is a tweet. Just a reminder. David wasn't described as a man after God's own heart when he was a king. It wasn't after he murdered Uriah. It wasn't after he raped Bathsheba. It was when he was a teenager, before he had power, and it certainly isn't a reflection of who he became. Hot take. Hot take. I love this tweet, guys. I love it.
I'm reading the story of David right now. I'm in One of the Kings, so I get all mixed up.
What a depressing story.
Yeah.
It's all messed up.
It's a ride.
Lots of death. Lots of death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a big old sack of foreskins.
Dude, the biggest sack. The biggest sack of foreskins.
And what lots of conks, concubines, lots of...
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Initial thoughts, though. I'll start. Like, for me, I can't remember a time listening to somebody in the pulpit talk about David without mentioning a man after God's own heart, right? Like, that's something that we memorized in the church, like, growing up. And I've never heard somebody point to the fact that, hey, maybe this was a reference, at least, what's the word? Yeah, in the Bible, when he was younger versus when he was older. And did he maintain that relationship with God? Was he still a man after God's own heart, or would God actually call him that? I just thought it was an interesting take, for sure.
So just to be clear, were they emphasizing that he was a teenager? So that would have been the whole Goliath story, right? So are they saying that he was a man after God's own heart for killing Goliath?
I'm taking it for like when Samuel anointed him.
Yeah.
Or before that. Okay, so before that.
Yeah, so
I'm showing my lack of literacy in the Old Testament right here.
Yeah, no, I think the author is referencing that was earlier when he was anointed as king, and before he had so many like public falls, if you will, when he had power and when he was in leadership. Yeah, just thought that was an interesting tweet.
It is, just because I'm literally reading that right now. Like, I'm to the part where like his son Absalom is like taking over after him. Yeah. And God does kind of continue, at least in the eyes of the author, you know. But again, any historian will
son.
Exactly. any historian will tell you that history is written by the winners, and you know, David continues to win. So like, it is hard to know, but I think it's a very valid point. And it goes back to like the, you know, the famous quote, like, absolute power corrupts absolutely, you know, like the more power you get, of course you become more corrupted. And I think David was such a strong character in the Bible because Jerusalem was such a small tribal nation. So to have a king who was able to conquer when they were so used to being conquered over and over and over, or at least having this idea for them to look back on, whether or not David is a historical character or not, I don't know, you know. But it is interesting to bring that part up, because I think people do forget that the part that at least the author points to, that David is revered by God, it is pre-power, for that quote that we like to pull out.
Yeah. Well, I think you're seeing that now a little bit, or you'll see it in the future with conservatives. They're going to laud President Trump.
Yeah.
Because of what's just happened in the Supreme Court, regardless of what anything else he ever did, that's going to be his lasting legacy with conservatives forever. And so you already hear that now with that. So I think I can see why they would continue to say man after God's own heart with David, regardless of what he did, because they're willing to look past that for what they want to see.
What is it with God's people having like a stepchild mentality, kind of, or like, you know, like that's interesting, which is why God was like, in the Old Testament, he kept being like, I don't want to give you a king. Like, you don't need a king. Like, if you have a king, all of these things happen. And I feel like we saw that with King Trump as well, you know.
Ooh. All right, number three.
Also, real so quick, doesn't Absalom die because his hair gets stuck in a tree?
Yeah, it's really fun.
That is such an insane story.
I was just making sure that I didn't remember that wrong.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I can't believe that happened, but yes, that is actually in
the
Bible. He
had very beautiful hair too. So
he did.
I love the moments where it talks about like how pretty somebody's hair is, or there's a part that talks about Aaron and how he his beard was so long he would tuck it into his belt. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway, what was your next one?
Yeah. All right. So this is a bit of a two-parter. Hey, y'all want some two-pot? So this is from one of my favorite follows on Twitter, at Matthew E. Pierce. Matthew, I know you're listening. What's up? He said, yes,
soon to be sponsor.
Yeah, I would love that. Yes, it is possible to learn the Enneagram of your guardian angel by how much he cheers whenever you are having sex with your spouse. But the church is not ready for me to speak on this. I love it. How does that make how does it make y'all feel? I think it's so funny. It's so funny to me.
It does make you really happy.
It's so good. Leah just signed off. All right. Sweet. All right. And no thoughts on that one. Okay. I'm gonna go ahead and bring a Matthew E. Pierce tweet to every time that we do this segment. So, and then his second one, just for kicks and giggles, is men are visual. This is because we have eyes. Women are emotional because they do not have eyes.
And that one really got Brad for some reason.
Sorry.
He likes satire. So anyway, Malia doesn't think he's funny.
Thanks for the breakdown,
and now
David.
I think he's terrible.
I think that one was very funny. I liked them both. I literally in my head was trying to think of what my angel's Enneagram was, and I was landing on 7. That's all.
Oh.
So I was trying to decide.
So it sounds like there's a lot of cheering when you are having sex with your spouse. That's what's up. That's cool.
Yeah. All right. And then I was thinking about the other one. I was just like dissecting them in my mind.
Oh, great. Well, that
at least
was
it's not a 5, like doing research. That'd be weird.
God, yeah. Seriously. That's true.
At least now we know who was watching from the first tweet, because they did say, oh, well, somebody watches. So is it just their guardian angel was very judgmental in that?
That's a good point, man. Yeah. Tori's guardian angel was definitely either a 5 or a 1. Like,
I hope
super
that's
judgmental.
What it was,
or, yeah.
I'm still concerned about their spouse just watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm married to a 1, but he's not super judgmental. He's really nice.
I kind of love Blake. So, Blake, what's up? Yeah. So, that was our segment.
Sorry, you
Weird
can't have a mustache,
Christian
man.
Twitter segment.
He can have one. I just don't like it. His face is too
Which means
skinny.
He can't have one.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know why that last one got me. I wasn't expecting that.
It really did.
It just reminds me, I've been watching some of those tortilla things with the people slap each other with tortillas with water in their mouth trying to get it. And some of those are pretty funny.
I haven't tried it.
People from our youth group were suggesting that we do that next week.
You have too much beard?
The secret is the element of surprise.
I mean, it'll help me. I'll just put my hair down too. So I'll have a lot of padding. And I will slap the crap out of one of those kids with a tortilla.
See, but I think the secret, it's not about hitting hard. It's about surprising them and making it funny, because you're just trying to get them to crack up, right?
So they don't know what's about to happen?
I was taking that it hurts. Like, it hurts more than you
think. Because a lot of them I've seen, they just like barely slap them with the thing. It's just kind of about the I don't know, just the act of it. And it's just, it's so ridiculous that it makes you laugh. Because some of them, I've watched them like slap each other at the same time, and the harder that they do it, they don't seem to really react. But if it's kind of a joke.
I can imagine if it was more of a caress across the face with a tortilla, it would probably get me a lot more than if it was slapping.
I just want nachos. Don't waste a tortilla. I'm serious.
Okay.
So yeah. So after James said caress,
so slap each other with tortillas.
Face,
I just want nachos.
Give me the nachos. I don't want no tortillas. Yeah. I immediately went to like, oh, that's sensual. And then Malia goes, I just want nachos. And that made me happy. Okay. And we're back. I'm going to need a transition.
Where
Let me
we
try
go?
One more time. We're going to do.
No, if you need a transition, I'm expecting a song. So hit it.
It's questions with Malia. Malia, we're so glad that you're still here. We really thought we were going to lose you in those first two segments. How are you doing today?
It's fine. I'm wondering if you're going to get vape lung because you're vaping. I'm going to judge you for that. Ugh. I'm sorry.
No, you're not. And you don't have
to. Don't be mad. I like you. I want you to stick around. I'm now mom of the podcast, everyone.
Yeah. So
we needed it. So,
yeah. So I have a nicotine problem that I've had since my early 20s. Malia, thank
don't
you
be mad.
For your feedback. At least I'm not blasting cigs. I got rid of the cigs.
The same thing.
We'll talk about that later off mic.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just care about you. That's all.
I appreciate that. Thank you for your love and care. And my wife,
I'll text you after this to make sure you're not mad at me.
All right, sweet. So you're new to the podcast. And sorry. I thought it'd be fun for us to dive into a little bit of your story. And luckily, we kind of dived in at the beginning of the podcast, but let's jump back in. You know, we had fun with Twitter, but I want to know more about Malia. So Malia, I'm going to start it off with the first question. If you had to pick between tortillas and nachos, what would you pick and why?
Well, you know that answer. It's nachos.
All right. Let's go with question two. Okay.
Sorry. Right, I've been a ball buster my whole life. You guys knew this when you invited me on.
No, you haven't. You have been. I love it. You've been busting my balls since we were in junior high, so thank you.
Remember those ball necklaces you guys all wore?
Oh, God, those were terrible. Yes, we remember them. Why did we do that?
They were so big, overcompensating.
So big. Oh, my God. Yeah. And they weren't even the size of like a ball, like a man's ball. all right. So what is your earliest memory of the church or youth group? And that kind of ties in fun. So it could be like a funny memory from either church or youth group, or maybe a funny memory that involves us. That's like not technically your youth group, but we were kind of your youth group.
I'm trying to think of like a funny early memory. Well, I mean, lock-ins were always super fun for dorky, horny junior high kids who just like want to hang out with people all night long.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Did you ever make out at a lock-in? Because I didn't.
No.
I didn't get any action at any lock-in. Like, it was zero, nada, none of it. I hear these stories of other people who I guess were more attractive than I was that did get action at lock-ins. And I want to know their secret.
Yeah. I feel like that was a missed opportunity. No, I was not one of those. Yeah, I was not one of those. I feel like I'm trying to remember like with your guys' church. I remember like coming to like worship nights or whatever at your church. I remember also when you guys would go to Falls Creek, speaking of getting action, I would always like secretly judge everyone who went to Falls Creek because I just assumed everyone hooked up that went to Falls Creek because that was like the thing.
Yeah. Again.
Was that true?
So
well, it might have been true, but
for
a
lot
me.
Of people. But not
James
for
is
awkward.
Like, yep.
Yeah. Well, James had like you had serial relationships in high school, didn't you? Yeah. I mean, you dated way more people than we did.
No.
Is your mic off?
I think you're on
your mic. Your mic is off. I think. And everybody wants to hear your response to my question.
Yeah. Bated breath.
Right. I was actually not referencing my experience in that. Every time I hear about that, I think of the time Matt O'Mealy kissed the wrong girl at Falls Creek, which
that's
was outstanding.
So amazing.
I think I was supposed to go to a dance with Matt in high school and he got grounded or he wasn't allowed to go with me for some reason. Is that I feel like I vaguely remember that.
It's probably true.
He's not here to answer that question. I don't
remember.
Yeah,
no. That's
it was like freshman year. It's like 13, 14.
But you definitely went to a dance with me when we were even younger. We were even younger than that because it was junior high.
No, we did not.
Oh, was it high school then? We definitely went to it. We definitely went to a dance together.
No, I don't think it was junior high.
I was really hoping you were going to say that you never went to one with him.
No, I think we did go to one in high school, but I dated different guys in junior high.
Yeah, for the record, I'm going to absolutely post a picture of Malia and I at the dance for our listeners so that they can see that.
I think you may have taken me the one that Matt asked me to and then got grounded. I think you may have stepped in.
Oh.
I think. Ooh, I feel like I vaguely remember that.
Dude, good for me. That's awesome. Yeah. That was high school. You're right.
I think so. I think it was like freshman year or sophomore year. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah. My hair was really bad.
I was still in my awkward stage. That's so nice of you. My awkward stage lasted until like junior or senior year.
I adored you. Are you kidding me? We had a blast. I'm just saying. It was awesome. So. Okay. All right. Next question. James, Brad, feel free to jump in with a question if you want to, or I can go on to question number three. All right. So we all grew up in Claremore, Oklahoma. Most of our listeners to this podcast are not from Claremore, Oklahoma. So what in your mind stands out about our strange little town that had so many like surprisingly interesting people come out of?
Lots of idiosyncrasies. The trains. I don't know if you guys remember, but I had the most tardies out of anyone. It was announced at baccalaureate and my mom got really, really mad because I was always late coming back during lunch. Do you guys also remember how many fights we had in our tiny, tiny little town? That's why they let us go off campus. And so that honestly really prepared me to work in Title I schools and break up so many fights because I witnessed so many in our high school. I don't know if you guys remember.
Yep.
But I remember because I got blood on my shoe. I was
talking about that yesterday.
Yeah, so
and you were still so upset about that.
I hate fights. Like it like scarred me. And so like working in Title I schools and I can't tell you how many fights I've broken up. Like I jumped in between fights as a teacher all the time and people would get mad at me. But it was because like in Claremore, we witnessed them all the time. So as a teacher in my head, I'm like, I have to stop this because this can't turn into what it was for us in high school.
That is very true that I feel like our school had a definite disproportionate amount of fights.
I remember one of the teachers told me once we had more fights at our school per capita than like any of the other schools in Oklahoma. Like those like 2 years or so. One of the teachers told me that.
Yeah, we certainly did like our junior year because that's why we were the only one, the only class that got to go out junior and senior year because there was so many and they just had to get people
out.
And I do remember, I still have one that I can vividly see in my mind. And there was just one and it was between two friends. And I'll never forget it. It was in the cafeteria of the high school. And at first it was just kind of like your standard like high school fight, you know, they're just pushing each other, yelling stupid stuff. And then one of them just decided to end it. And I remember the sound when he haymakered that kid and connected.
I feel like I'm thinking of the same one.
And they were friends. That's the craziest part. And I remember that it was all because the one went to the other one's house and went in their house when they weren't supposed to or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
And man, I'll never forget that sound and just seeing that kid just drop and everybody just going like, oh God, did he just die? Like what just happened?
You know? Like went down. And it was because it was by the Coke machines because I was getting a Diet Coke and that kid went down and I got blood on my shoe. And That was the one.
So
I was just trying to get my Diet Coke.
So working with teenagers and stuff here, there was one specifically who stayed with us for a while and would come home and like talk about a fight he was in at school. I was like, there's not a mark on you. You weren't in a fight. And I'm so judgmental of fights that happen now. And he posts videos of fights all the time and everybody's just fine afterward. Mm-hmm. People got messed up in fights at school. It was crazy.
The fights I've broken up, kids got messed up. So really? I think it depends on where you're at. Like, as a teacher, and my students always knew, they were like, if you want to make Miss Mullins mad, get into a fight because it makes me so upset and I will jump between. And that's why I loved I always love all my students, but I had a few students a few years ago. This is a weird thing about me. I have a messed up back. I think it's from having children. I don't really know. I threw out my back somehow as like a woman in her 30s. But I was breaking up a ton of fights that year. And one of my students, he would always get between and he was so much bigger than me. And he'd always be like, I'm going to get between this one for you because I don't want you to hurt your back again. I was like, thank you. And so, or like they would do it in the bathroom.
What a nice kid. They
knew. He was so sweet. And so he'd be like, I'm going to go break it up for you. And I'm like, thanks, dude. So, because our kids, like, I remember I was wearing a suede jacket and some of my kids got bloody. And I was like, if you get blood on my jacket, I'm going to be so mad because I'm wearing suede. So they were like, I'm sorry. So, yeah, I don't do fights. This really upset me.
So on behalf of Matt, since he's not here again, in fifth grade, there was once when Miss Tillery left the room and two girls in our class, one of them, the biggest girl in our class, they got in a fight over Matt O'Mealy. And one of them was like thrown into desks, knocking stuff everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Like,
they got really into it. It was awesome. Miss Tillery's class was the best. When Matt comes back, we need to just talk about Miss Tillery's class because that was an amazing year. But anyway.
That's funny. I've never once fought over a male before in my life. Y'all not worth it.
Oh, Matt O'Mealy.
I know. I'm still surprised at the spell that he would put on ladies when he was younger. It was those blonde curls. So
no, it was the butt cut at that point.
Oh, the butt cut.
Yeah.
You're right. That's a good point. Did he have to straighten his hair? I think so.
Matt did a lot of things to his hair.
Love you, Matt. All right, so Malia, you talked about like teaching, and we can definitely dive into that. But you went into ministry before teaching. Am I correct in that?
Yes.
Can you talk to me a little bit about that experience, like pros and cons of that? I think you've hit on it a little bit before, and purity culture is something that comes up a lot on this podcast. But how was being in ministry for you at that point when you were in it, and then the effects of obviously being a female that maybe not you weren't allowed to take the leadership roles or whatever that you may have wanted to in that experience?
Yeah. So I honestly didn't go looking for it. It just kind of fell onto me.
You were called to ministry, right?
Yeah.
Like somebody called you, like God.
Someone.
Right?
On the phone. They texted me, I think. But
yeah, texted into ministry doesn't sound near as good, though.
I know. So I graduated college in 2008, and it was right as like the crash happened. So like all the first year teachers got laid off. So I was honestly bored, and I was trying to decide if I was going to do grad school. I was trying to decide if I wanted to go straight into like master's of education or if I wanted to do counseling therapy. So I was just trying to decide. And my friend texted me and was like, hey, you want to come work with us this summer, inner city kids. And that's always been my jam, Title I schools, all that. And then I literally just fell into the job and I just continued to do their children's ministry. And so it was an inner city church. Looking back now, there are so many things I did so wrong. Very white savory, very cringy. At the time, I didn't know it, just thought I was helping, you know. And I think that's something that a lot of people have to go through within ministry is start to learn, like, I am not the savior here. And I got there eventually because I worked in that job for close to 10 years. And so I love those people. I love the work that I did. It's kind of what led me to get back into social work in general, because that's kind of mainly what I was doing. Like, I was doing ministry, but I was doing social work with absolutely no training. And that's something that, like, I was like, oh, I got to go get trained up in this. And so it was a trial by fire and like learning that there are so many people in the world with so many different perspectives, with so many different issues, but that doesn't make their issues bigger or worse or whatever than mine. And I think that's a huge issue that a lot of Christians have. They see poverty culture as like, this is so terrible, but it's just people's lives. You know, they have issues just like I have issues. And honestly, I would rather work with those sorts of people than the richest guy on the block, because they're so much realer than that guy is, you know? And so that it was a really formative time for me. I met my husband there. It opened my eyes to everything we deal with now, with the Supreme Court stuff that's happening now, everything. It all goes back to people's power, lack of agency and choice. And so it formed me into who I am, into who I want to continue to be, and how I feel like in order to actually have faith, we have to see people for who they are and not see people for what they can give us and or outcomes, if that makes sense. Which I feel like I had to learn through ministry. And it's not about like getting your profile picture with this little kid from an impoverished country. Because I think that's what ministry looks like to a lot of people. Like, that's the outcome they're looking for. And I think that's really wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure how evangelical Church of Christ is, but for us, it felt like every interaction that you have needs to be transactional to where you are moving people closer to becoming a Christian. And if they're not going to, you need to move on. Like, there's not an aspect of really investing in people. It's,
yeah,
it, especially ministry, feels very transactional.
Yeah, that's still a thing. I don't know if you guys remember, Church of Christ is very baptism oriented. And that's their outcome that they're looking for. It's like, instead of like boots on the ground, it's like heads underwater. and so, yes, that's still kind of an issue. And I see, you know, kind of like you said, like the transactional, like, I get it. Like, I work in therapy and mental health, and we want to see good outcomes. We want to see something actionable. I totally understand that. The problem is faith and people, it's really hard to be totally actionable all the time. And once you kind of pivot to that place, you become success driven. The saviorism is going to happen. You know, like, all those sorts of things are going to go for, like, going to fall like dominoes. But when you see people as people and as just a community, and that you're walking with them, like, you can't save them because you can't save yourself. So why are you trying? That pivot is hard to make, but it's an important pivot to make, in my opinion.
Yeah. That's a thing that I had to work with, and David did some stuff at Hope House as well, where we were interacting with the homeless community a lot. And that's definitely a thing you have to learn there, is being willing to invest in somebody who very possibly and probably will not change, and that they're still worth that investment is very difficult, but also necessary, I feel like. Mm-hmm. In an attempt to be like Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exhausting trying to be like Christ. I truly realized it with Hope House ministry and working with the homeless. Because what James is talking about, like, that's my go-to, is like, let me fix it. I want to fix it. Stop bothering me. Like, that's my very true selfish nature. And yeah, it was really, really, really difficult working with folks that it's not an easy fix. It's, you can't throw money at something and make the problem go away. And that's a very hard thing for me to wrap my head around.
Well, I think in ministry, people think the problem goes away when that person looks like me.
Right.
Not even like, I want them to look like Christ. You want them to look like you, you know? And that's a really hard thing to realize, that like, you're trying to make them into a version of yourself. Ministry can very easily become a tool of colonization without, you don't even realize it's happening, you know? Because we tend to deify ourselves in ministry positions. And that's where the white saviorism all stems from, you know, like, I become this. And so it takes, I struggle with ministry, not ministry, mission, like mission trips and stuff in general, just with that. Only because, and not trying to be a jerk, as someone who worked in ministry, we had lots of people come in as missionaries and mission trips and bring their youth groups in. And they did great work and they loved on the kids for a week, you know, and then they went home, which is fine. The kids loved it. It was great. Sometimes it was so much more work on me though, you know, because I was the one that was with them all the time. And so it's not bad. I'm not like crapping on mission trips. Like, they're great. And I would always tell mission trip groups that came in, this is more for you than it is for us, because it is important for you to expand your worldview. And it's important for you to get past this, because I wish I was past this before now. You know, like, I wish I had figured this out in high school, that like, they're not better if they look like you, and they're not better just because you're here. Honestly, you're better because you got to know them.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing for people to learn.
Yeah. I can get behind mission trips if that's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I mean, and that's a lesson that takes time. I mean,
yeah, legitimately. It's not something we were taught in high school, you know?
Right.
But it's almost like, is that something you can be taught before you live it? You know, I think for me and my stubbornness, like, I think it would have been hard for me to learn that lesson without living through that lesson. But
I think it depends on how often your critical consciousness has been expanded from an early age. So like,
ooh, define critical consciousness. I haven't heard those two words put together.
So Paulo Freire was an educational social work guy from Brazil, like back in like the 70s. And he basically, it comes from a lot of CRT comes from here. So CRT alert, guys.
That's the sound of people shutting the podcast off.
I'm so sorry.
No, please keep going. I love it. I'm interested.
It's basically just the understanding that there are people out there that have a life that is harder than mine. It's like, oh, I'm critically conscious of that. That there are people that, because of where they've been born, the opportunities they've been given, their skin, their poverty, like whatever, their life is harder than mine. It's just that critical understanding. In order to have that, though, you have to meet people to understand that. And then you have to have some sort of like moment where you're like, oh crap. Like, if I was born in this place at this time, I maybe would be where they are. You know, I maybe wouldn't be making all the best financial decisions. Like, they're not making the best financial decisions right now. I really wish they'd make these choices, but they haven't been given what I've been given. Like, so my husband, his parents went to college. They knew what the FAFSA was. They knew how to study for the ACT. He made a really, really good score on the ACT, and he'd kill me if I said what he made, but he made a really good score. I didn't make that good of a score. I stayed the night at Lacey's house before every ACT, never bought a calculator, most of the time didn't have a pencil. I didn't know it was a big deal. My score was just fine. But because of, like, you know, just his thing, getting ACT score help and having ACT prep, his score was really good. You know, it's just that critical understanding that because certain people start at a different spot, they're further down the line, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I had a similar experience with something I went through in grad school called the privilege walk, which was really just me realizing, oh, so it's not normal for people to have 200 books in their house or for their parents to have cars that work or to be able to pay for healthcare and stuff like that. It was just like really shocking for me. But
yeah. There's a lot of unknown rules in our communities, and especially within like BIPOC communities, that people don't know. You know, these people enter college and you wonder why their retention rate is incredibly low. You know, they don't know this stuff. Like, they weren't taught these things. So that's what it's called, critical consciousness. It's like becoming aware and having that moment. And not only, it's important to move beyond that because you kind of have that aha moment. But a lot of times we don't go out and like, okay, so how do I do something about this? Does that mean I make, you know, do I make friends in this, try to make more friends in this community? Because I look around and I'm like, man, my community is white. You know, do I encourage these sorts of things? Do I vote this way? Do I encourage my kids to go to diverse schools? You know, there's just different things you can do. Sorry, I'm on my soapbox now, but I will hop off. So,
all right. So, fun question.
Hold on. Before we go to fun, so with that, is that something that's critical consciousness? Is that for self or like working towards things for yourself or for other people?
So, it's both. It's a really, in my opinion, so like studies show that schools that teach the understanding of critical consciousness, and notice I didn't say CRT, which they should be, but I'm making my opinions very known on that. But critical consciousness is a little bit easier to swallow. Schools that teach this, not only do their BIPOC communities do much better overall, but their entire community does better. So like academically, they do better. There's so many, like there's better outcomes for that. It's important for kids, especially like Black and brown students, to understand that feeling that they get when they don't feel like they belong, there are other kids that feel that same feeling. And the reason why maybe they're not succeeding in this thing is partially having to do with like the systemic prejudice that has happened in our country for the past several hundred years and, you know, beyond. And that all of those things epigenetically are being passed down. So it's not entirely their fault. It doesn't mean that they're, because it all goes back to that capability sort of mindset. And they start to realize it's not a capability thing. There are other things in play. So if my whole school realizes that, there's a whole community behind me. So those kids go to college. Those kids get higher earning degrees. And then they have a whole community that's behind them as well. That is expanded and has, like I said, the critical consciousness, the whole understanding. So the whole community rises to an even higher level.
How do you navigate that without doing more of like the colonizing mentality, though? Like, mm-hmm. as you're trying to move people towards that, I can see how that would be very easy to make people more white,
yeah,
as better. So how does
it's more about, it's not about making, work. Yeah, not making the white people better. It's more about just allowing the students to realize that they have the capability, like they have the mentality. There are systemic things in place because other people are working to dismantle those within that school. So when you start from like a young age, these elementary school kids, it's not about like these kids know these unspoken rules and these kids don't. There's a whole new set of rules, if that makes sense. So like when I was working in ministry, I had a primarily Hispanic and Black population that I was working with, and sweet and sometimes unsweet white people would come in and want me to lay down the law like a drill sergeant because these kids weren't walking in lines or they were running on the chair. They were just being joyful and they're being kids, but no one was walking around with them, making them be quiet or whatever. There was all these unspoken rules that they wanted me to put on them, which I was not going to do, you know, like I wasn't going to, no, I'm not doing that. You know, there's other things that are happening. So it's about kind of learning to not necessarily put those rules into place for them, but changing the rules overall, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
David, you can have fun now.
Sorry.
Okay, thanks, man.
I went way off on that.
Okay, so this is going to be my last question. And all right, so Malia, I do remember you being a huge fan of music, but also like pop culture when we were in high school. Like I remember you being a big Friends fan, I think.
Is that correct?
And then, I just wanted you to share with everybody, what's like a guilty pleasure, either movie or show or music or band or something that gives us kind of a look into who you are as a person?
I would say I'm very eclectic, but my disassociation playlist of TV is Parks and Rec, The Office, New Girl on rotation. So I like cycle through those three. Friends sometimes,
ding,
but
ding,
I,
ding.
Yeah, I definitely kind of wore that out in high school. I used to watch that constantly. So I'm currently on New Girl. That's how I disassociate at night. And then I go to sleep. So, music
New Girl
wise
is amazing.
It's a great show.
And
it needs
out
to have more accolades.
Constantly.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then Parks and Rec is like my guilty pleasure, happy show. Like when Trump was elected, I watched like 15 episodes that night. So, and I like told my unborn child, I was like, I'm so sorry. We're going to watch Leslie for a little while. and so, and then The Office I also like, but it just gets a little mean sometimes. So I have to kind of switch it up.
True.
But, if I'm going to say my guilty pleasure music, oh gosh, I will do new Taylor Swift. That's a guilty pleasure. I would also Harry
love
Styles,
it.
But that is not a guilty pleasure. I love him. and then Lana Del Rey is my like guilty pleasure. So
is it?
I don't
it's
even
not
know
guilty
it is.
Though. Lana Del Rey is.
She's got
quite,
some like
quite respectable, man.
I mean, she's
musically.
Got some stuff. Like she can be kind of weird feministically. So there's some things that are kind of,
yeah.
As a feminist, I'm like, okay. So.
Well, she is mildly, isn't she mildly Republican, which is like really offensive.
I don't know. Like
the,
she would probably like
rockers.
name her baby like Cigarette Rose or something. So
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't come
love,
after me.
I do love her music. So. Nice shout out there.
Yeah.
Well, that's Malia. in a nutshell, or at least, I don't know, 20 minutes of talking to you,
in
which was really great.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, and I think our listeners are going to love hearing more of your perspectives, and yeah, thanks for sharing.
So that's it. That's it. That's our episode. This is Malia. So hopefully you enjoyed getting to know her a little bit. I know I did. You can find us on all kinds of social medias. We are, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. David does a good job of posting for us on that. We have a website, everythingsokay.net. There you can go and see all kinds of old or new episodes we have on there. We have some blog posts that we made. They're kind of old at this point. Hopefully we start writing a little bit more, but you can find us on all those different avenues.
You know where they can find some writing though, is if they join our newsletter, which I'm putting out every 2 weeks. And so, yeah, that's a great way to kind of get plugged in there. And then on the social media front, I just wanted to shout out. So we are on Instagram. It's Everything Is Okay Podcast. Follow us there. We put a lot of stuff up there, and it's a really fun way for y'all to kind of interact with us. And then we're also on the Twitters, and we're quite active over there as well. So Everything Is Okay Podcast, just search it. You can find us and let us know what you think of our episode, share it with friends, that sort of thing. And then lastly, we talked about on the previous episode, how good was Shane? Malia, you did so great on that episode.
Shane is awesome.
So. Shane's a good hang. So tell us what you thought of our conversation with Shane Claiborne. And then check our merch stuff out and support us there as well. And Brad, we still got to put up some new Patreon episodes.
We got a few Patreon that we are I'm behind on that. So I think we owe three. So I'm gonna try to get a couple of those out here soon. I mean, speaking of Shane, he got to go to the White House on his birthday, so that's pretty awesome.
It's the dream.
The gun legislation. So that's pretty awesome. But
that's a big deal for them. Yeah.
Y'all, we did put out a request of our listeners, and I want to put it out on an episode as well as social media. So we did ask if you would be willing to join an episode. We are looking for some people that are willing to give us up to 60 seconds of where you believe the state of the country is at, where when it comes to all kinds of things, the Supreme Court rulings, guns, abortion, whatever's going on. If you are willing to join us and just do a quick audio recording on your phone, works really great. Please be in a quiet room when you do it. But
you heard
if
it
you're
from
willing to
Brad,
join us,
the producer.
Please, you can reach out to us, and we'd be happy to have you. I promise that I will give you a fair shake. It will not be cut down and edited for our own purposes. It will be, you can remain anonymous, but we would love to have you be a part of a future episode that we're going to do. So,
unless it's for me, I asked Brad to cut lots of things out because.
But you have that privilege now.
Yeah. So
yeah,
it's just for me.
So yeah, and give us really silly fake names if you don't want us to share. Right. Be like, I'm Jerry the Silly Bean. It doesn't
Poopsie
have to be
McGee.
Like that.
Wow,
Poopsie McGee. Like, there's lots of options. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, y'all have kids.
Yeah,
called out, but accurate. Yeah. But accurate.
Yeah.
So
if you're interested, reach out to us. Send it. You can send us an email, info@everythingisokay.net. You can reach out to us on social media. If you have our phone number, you can send it in a text message, however works best for you. But with that, we will go ahead and end this episode. I'm Brad Stair.
I'm David Meggs.
I'm James Eisenhower.
And I'm Malia Mullins Turner. I can't do this.
That was so good.
That was perfect.
And on behalf of Matt O'Mealy, everything is okay, people.
That amazing.
Was wonderful. We even have trouble. Very. We have trouble with your last name, Malia.
I'm not the one to point the finger. I'm not the one to bring you down. How long will this bad luck linger? How long will we be afraid to break off?